Before we get started with today's episode of Amped Up with Ryan Knight, we want to let you know that we have exclusive bonus content on Patreon at patreon.com/ampedup. You can find the video versions of all our interviews, as well as bonus content with me, Ryan's producer, Rob Bermudez. So make sure you check out our bonus content today at patreon.com/ampedup. Thanks for your support and enjoy the show.
Welcome to Amped Up. This is your host, Ryan Knight, and our guest today is Nick Cruz. Nick is an activist, a commentator, the co-founder of 10 Demands for Justice, the co-founder of Fred Hampton Leftists, and a board member for National Ranked Choice Voting. Nick, welcome to Amped Up.
Hey, man, I'm super happy to join you, Ryan. Big fan of the content you put out there, so I've been looking forward to finally talking to you, so I'm very, very excited.
I feel the same way. I am a huge fan of your content, and I'm humbled and honored to have you on the show today. And I want to start off with a new article you wrote. It's fantastic. I just read it last night, and it's on the police violence epidemic in America. And it's titled, The Rise of Defund the Police, The New Civil Rights Movement 2.0. And I want to read a few lines from your article. You write, for decades, the Black community has been trying to tell the world a story. Those of us who have been blessed with the ability have shared our tales of police violence and brutality. Our music, poetry, and other works of fiction have been the only ways to express the pain inflicted upon us. Now the world has the internet. Thus, the cruelty the Black community has been subjected to, that white America has denied, has been laid out for all to see. We live in a fascist police system that has only one goal: impose racial hierarchies and protect private property of the rich. You know, so many Americans, especially white liberals and white conservatives, think the function of the police is to protect and serve the people, when in reality, as you compellingly argue in your piece, the function of the police is to maintain social control, impose racial hierarchies, and protect and serve the interests of the capitalist class. Where does this propaganda about the police, which you call copaganda in your article, come from? And as a Black man living in America, is it frustrating or liberating that it took the invention of the internet for more Americans to finally listen to the pain that racist policing has inflicted on the Black community for decades now?
Yeah, and as I lay out, the stories that we are telling right now, and now people are understanding how the police actually operate in terms of imposing white supremacy. They literally act as an occupying force in our communities now, and everyone know they don't actually protect and serve us, that they actually are designed to serve the capitalist class. So people know that, but throughout my entire life, this is not shocking information. I mean, I heard stories that my dad told me about, his stories of police brutality. I mean, we have uncles, we have cousins, we got brothers, we got neighbors. I mean, we all live this story and we tell it all the time. We tell it through our music. The people who had, just like I said in the article, there was a lot of people who had the opportunity to share their stories. And we, for example, like rap, hip hop, movies, poetry, any avenue that we had, it across multiple avenues, actually, we explain what it's like to go through police brutality, not just us as well. One thing that we always emphasize at the Fred Hampton Leftists is straight up solidarity. So I also wanted to mention my article that Native Americans and Latino Americans, I mean, these are also, I mean, we've seen a rise in hate crimes against Asian Americans as well. So these are issues that all of our communities are facing. So we got to stay in solidarity with each other and call it out as it is. In terms of propaganda, this is something that there's a generational divide, and not even just this issue. And something I always stress, that all these issues connect. They're all interconnected. So if you are for defund the police, you must be for the fight against ending U.S. imperialism. You must be for the fight to end the inhumane immigration policy of the United States. Because if you actually look into it, it's rooted in the same ideology. And it can't survive, and that's only way capitalism can survive is by implementing these forces of oppression that's meant to uplift the ruling class by subjugating the people they deem lesser and the people they need to control. So as I mentioned in the article as well, silver asset forfeiture is just one example. Who are the people who are targeted by this system? Black, every single time you look at it local level, because they do the studies on a local level, 50%, 60% Black Americans are affected by this, despite us being 9-13% of the population in some of these areas. So this is the system working as it designed. But as you mentioned, we are surrounded by propaganda. So there are a lot of people who still believe the police protect and serve our communities. I mean, these are fun movies. Die Hard, Rush Hour 2. Very fun movies. I like Jackie Chan. I'm a big fan. But that is not what they do. They're not busting in people at home, solving crimes. They come after the case. And then studies show they do a horrible job at that. So I'm very happy about our generation who are going through a completely different reality than the older generation. Because I had grandparents and fathers and other relatives who watched like Law and Order and all these other TV shows that straight up propaganda. I call it propaganda because it's so deep. People don't even realize that they are being propagandized. Like even the concept that police are designed to solve crimes and protect our community, I challenge people who are critics of my article and critics of the concept of defund the police to name one time in which this ideal police system of yours ever existed. And if you comb through history, you read the literature of Black leftists throughout history, like Fred Hampton is one of them, W.E.B. Du Bois is another one, Malcolm X is another one. I quote these people in my article. Angela Davis is a famous activist who speaks about these things because it's been a constant pattern. This isn't a new issue. I mean, this has been an issue since the start of the slave trade. I mean, they started out as slave control. So that's my breakdown. This is why I went to write this piece. I hope it's a way for people to easily reference these many ways I debunk propaganda. So that was my mindset when I wrote the article.
Yeah, and you share a personal story where you say the police have never served our communities. I remember a few years ago, I had my apartment broken into. My door was kicked in, my computer was stolen, along with my friend's phone and a few others. As a poor working class person, I was devastated. We obviously called the police, expecting them to help because our society tells us that this was the right thing to do. Well, when the police arrived at the scene, they were extremely indifferent to my plight. They seemed more annoyed than anything that I was taking up their time. Influenced by propaganda, I assumed they would check fingerprints, outside security cameras, and essentially do everything they could to catch the criminal. After 5 minutes or so of conversation, they shrugged their shoulders and told me, essentially, there was nothing they could do. My friend and I were stunned. This planted the seed for my eventual realization that the police are not helpful to the working class. Nick, what was it like for you as a Black man to call the police for help after your property had been stolen, only to find out that the police didn't care and had no intention of ever protecting you or your property the same way it protects the property of the ruling class?
And the critics of defund the police are deeply unserious people for the same exact reason, because they don't even understand the role of the police. Do people understand that there was actually a federal lawsuit would actually let cops off the hook because they say they have no legal obligation to protect you? That is literally not in their job description. And I share my story because a lot of people, they read a lot of leftist literature, which is great. It's a great resource. I read a lot into that because I think it's a great way to advance your, it's a good way to improve yourself as a lefty yourself. So, but there are a lot of people like me who, they became anti-establishment. We found leftist policy through our life experiences. So I share, and I'm very open about the time I used to be Obama fanboy. I used to really like the Democratic Party. And once again, like I said, I appreciate your content because you're open about your time when you used to be loyal to the Democratic Party. And I was the same. But we grow out of this through life experience. And once again, I call the police. I don't call the police. I'm hesitant to call the police. Like, period now, because I understand it only leads to trouble. But back then, I was a good little lib, and once again, I like Rush Hour, and I bought into the propaganda as it was sold to me, as I was raised to believe what they taught us in public school. And once again, when I called the police, I was fully expecting, because once again, if you watch Law and Order, you have the protagonist that's always good looking, who show up at the scene, and he's really concerned about solving the crime. I mean, they always bring fingerprints. They have analysts on the scene there, but they're not the reality. And the funny thing, I'm like, okay, this is my story. But luckily, I had the platform I do, so I wanted to share other people's story. And I linked this in the article as well. And then the funny thing, I can complain. I mean, it was very devastating because I'm a poor working class Black guy, and I lost a MacBook computer that I saved for months. My friend lost a phone. We lost a few other gadgets as well. I mean, that's I mean, it's just little stuff, but these kind of things we stay for a long time to afford. But when I look, I ask people, I'm like, oh, just share your stories. I want to hear what you guys have been through. And despite my complaints and my story is still really relatively tame. I mean, when people ask why our generation, why are people being radicalized against the police, the stories that we see with George Floyd and Breonna Taylor, they help out a lot because they help send a shocked wave to the nation. But eventually these little stories add up. And talk to someone and ask them about their experience with the police. I mean, at least in my neighborhood, I guess there's some people who are more privileged, so I'll be careful when I say that. But in my neighborhood, if you ask people what their encounter with the police and what that's been like, you're not going to hear a good story. And this stuff is starting to add up. And my story is tame compared to what I heard from other people. I'm not going to say their name directly, but I heard stories about some of them being raped, some of them being framed, some of them literally being... I heard stories about someone committing heinous acts against someone who the police actively protected because there was a son of a powerful person. Once again, I'm being very vague here because I don't want to blow them. I linked the tweet in the article. Check it out. Read the stories. And you realize that my story is actually really tame. So once again, these things add up. I know that's anecdotal evidence. I acknowledge that. But you got to understand, this is what the foundation, the Defund the Police platform is built on. These small stories of cop incompetence. So Go ahead, Ryan.
Well, and it's your lived experience. You know, it's like these are lived experiences of many, many black people in this country who look at white people and especially white privileged people who say, well, no, the police are sworn to protect and serve. And they're like, well, they're not protecting and serving my communities. So when you hear the stories and you see it on TV, you're absolutely right. You see, you know, the murder of George Floyd live on television, the cop literally, you know, putting his knee over his neck. And it woke up the country. I think a lot of the people who didn't realize what was actually going on in neighborhoods, that the police aren't protecting, that they're actually doing the opposite of protecting. They're oppressing, they're violating, they're murdering the people that they swore to protect. They're doing the exact opposite.
Yeah, and this is something that's very important to point out. I mean, when we look at the issue of George Floyd, I mean, when we look at a lot of these other issues, it's literally based on how the system is set up. Broken windows policing, because a lot of these people have multiple run-ins with law enforcement. I mean, the family of George Floyd openly said they didn't want police officers on the scene because they'd rather have an expert on the scene because they didn't trust the police in that time, but they still showed up and they did what they did. So we never had this inherent trust because, once again, we through our lived experience, we understood that it pretty much is a system that doesn't work, like in terms of improving the quality of life and actually decreasing crime. And once I started paying attention more, and this is why the internet is very important, we started to share our tales, and it wasn't just in rap. We're like, okay, this is ordinary people who are telling our stories. And that's why we see it established now in a panic who want to limit the amount of people who can have a platform who share their stories. And that's why I tell people all the time, if you're in a situation where you can share a story, as far as I'm concerned, you're a journalist. You're a citizen journalist. We need to stop worshiping and putting a hierarchy on who can share a story, because obviously our media is corrupt. They are complicit with propaganda. For example, now they're trying to pretend that George Floyd is the one on trial instead of Derek Chauvin. So it's like, even though they don't flat out say it, they are complicit with propaganda as well. But you got to understand my mindset when it comes to advocating for defund the police and why this is important, because I come at this from the perspective, not only just a black man, but let's be intellectually consistent, because this is why I'm calling out the critics for defund the police. They're not being intellectually consistent. So I'm a libertarian socialist, or I may lean more anarchist. Once again, don't put too much stock on the labels, but this is the English language. This is how we communicate. So if I had to choose, that would be how I would label myself. And the concept is very simple. It comes from a good passage I heard from Noam Chomsky, where he said pretty much the concept of anarchism is where you have government that justifies itself. So once again, I dare my critics, especially if you're a right-leaning critic, where you say you are against Don't Tread on Me, you're against big government. You say that, but you are the one that actually advocating for a giant nanny state. What we are advocating for, me, you, and Ryan Knight, and a lot of our socialist friends, is for the workers to own the means of the production, for what we actually put towards our society to actually come back to our communities. And what I want to do is I actually don't want the nanny state. You guys are the advocate of the nanny state. The neoliberals and the conservatives who feel like they don't want to spend a lot of money on social programs that'll help the community, but they want to spend all this money on giant Pentagon budget, on giant police budgets that doesn't do anything to decrease crime. Study after study show that mental health care, housing, education, this is the kind of stuff that decrease crime. And you guys want to do all these deeply unserious programs that's not proven to work? I mean, the Minneapolis Police Department reformed itself 5 years before George Floyd was killed. So
yeah,
I'm asking people to be serious. That's the thesis of my article, and I hope people take that to heart once they read it.
Well, and you go on to write that, and I quote, you say that liberals and conservatives claim that police protect and serve their communities, but we already established they do not prevent crime. What they actually do is consistently impose regressive taxes on the poor and working class and communities of color in the form of fines, fees, and civil asset forfeiture. This for-profit policing is a capitalist scheme that operates to transfer wealth from minority communities back into the wealthy white ruling class. And when I read that line, it reminds me of the great Tupac Shakur, who once rapped, and I quote, that instead of a war on poverty, they got a war on drugs so the police can bother me. What does it say about America that instead of actually helping Black communities and doing something about poverty in our communities, that it's using the full power of the state to police them, terrorize them, criminalize them, and murder them, as we saw with George Floyd?
And they are quite open about what they're actually accomplishing when they do this kind of stuff. Because for-profit policing is literally a way they fund themselves. So if you, when I'm talking to liberals and they're saying that we should have reforms instead of actually defund the police, I'm begging you people to actually get serious about this conversation. Because if you actually ask these people, like, okay, what reforms will you actually support? Well, I support ending the drug war. I support ending for-profit policing. I'm like, okay, you support defunding the police then. Right. Because this is where do you think the money comes from? We actually used to spend very similar in terms of welfare program and social programs than we do with policing in the carceral state we spend right now. You know why that money was shifted greatly towards the carceral state? The drug war. Because the Reagan era. The shift literally started in the 80s.
That's right.
So I said it before, I'm just asking people to be intellectually consistent. So if you're calling for ending the drug war, which a lot of people are, but you are against the concept of defund the police, I want you explaining, where do you want the extra money to go? Like, where do you actually expect this money to go? Because the concept and what we've seen done in Colorado is they legalized marijuana, and now they invest in that money into education. You're getting people, they're getting tax rebates because of the amount of revenue they spend in the marijuana. So once again, this is just very common sense. Policies that once again come from a libertarian socialist perspective, because I quoted the regressive tactics because I want people to understand that when you actually look at what the police do, not only do they not solve crimes, they don't prevent rape cases, they only solve less than 2% of serious crime actually in a conviction. They spend a ton of their time just harassing the working class under the guise of serving them. I mean, you may think these things are necessary, but look at who they target. I mean, if you think speeding tickets are necessary, once again, this is my libertarian socialist leaning. Well, I think the speeding tickets are not something that is necessary because look who they are targeting. If you are actually a wealthy American, are you going to feel the impact of a speeding ticket? You don't care about that. So what's that policy actually, who that actually impacting? That'll actually be impacting the working class. And who will get pulled over the most? There's studies that show that Black Americans get pulled over 2 to 3 times more. Now, combine that with the concept of broken windows policing, where they openly go after poor and disenfranchised community, because the fallacy of broken windows policing is if they target disenfranchised communities in areas that they deem to be a higher risk of crime, you can stop smaller offenses, like selling cigarettes, for example, or traffic violations, because if you stop that, that will lead to a greater shift in the community that will decrease overall crime. I mean, this doesn't make sense at face value, and it never has been shown to be a case, but they use that as a pretext to police and colonize our community. So that's who they are targeting. That's who they go after. And I quote civil asset forfeiture as well, because why do they target our communities for these kind of things, because there's constant stories how the police is often fraudulent in a lot of these charges. I mean, once again, you can ask people about their stories. How like, y'all got this ticket and that was BS of why I got that ticket. And do you think they're lying? No, because a lot of these times, if you challenge a lot of these people who are proposing these regressive taxes in court, you can win a lot of these cases. And you, when civil action forfeiture is being acted upon you, you can win all those cases. But the people who don't have the money to challenge that in litigation is the poor African American and Latino communities. And that's why they target them. So they're not able to challenge them on civil action forfeiture and them pretty much having legal state theft. That's what it is. The fact that we can't even get the critics of defund the police to acknowledge that has to go. I mean, how serious are they actually being about this conversation? I mean, I wrote in the article, but our system is broken on every single foundation. And if you consider yourself a socialist, if you consider yourself a communist, if you consider yourself anti-authoritarian, you can't be supportive of these regressive taxes towards a working class that doesn't accomplish anything.
Yeah, and when we get into the whole, like, you know, the big debate really is reform versus revolution. And we see that in kind of, you know, when it comes to our policing system, when it comes to our decrepit capitalist system, when it comes to imperialism. And you write, I think, what's so important is just how connected all the corruption in our society is. That adds a lot of context to the debate of, can we even reform it to begin with? Which I don't think we can reform this system. I think we need a complete overhaul. Yeah. And you kind of argue the same thing here. And again, I'm going to quote your article because I think you really said it brilliantly. But you write that the liberal idea that we can reform such a system that was designed to suppress disenfranchised communities will always be a fool's errand. Racial capitalism and forces of oppression that created our police state are rooted in the same ideology that created imperialism and inhumane immigration policy. If you are supportive of ending U.S. imperialism, or if you wish to abolish ICE, you must recognize that the battle to end our racist police state is rooted in the same struggle. You know, we see this same debate of reform versus revolution playing out, like I alluded to earlier, with our racist policing system and our decrepit capitalist system. And what strikes me is the people who argue that we can reform these corrupt systems always seem to be the ones who aren't being oppressed by these systems.
Yeah, that's a very common...
and are disconnected from the lived realities of oppression. Nick, can you explain why it is foolish to think that we could ever have humane policing or humane capitalism, and why it is time to move beyond these oppressive systems and replace them with better systems that actually serve the people?
Yeah, when I was looking into this is one of the main factors that helped me finally absolutely just drop the capitalist label, because there's no way you can be a proponent of capitalism and actually be a real proponent of ending the carceral state. Because let's look at the carceral state as we know it right now. And this is why I say the police state ties with U.S. imperialism and inhumane immigration policy. What is the main driving factor for these things? It's capitalism. These things are a giant complex. Each in, like, on their own end, when you look at the military-industrial complex, I mean, these things was written about decades ago. I mean, war is a racket. I mean, people act like MLK and his advocacy ended after the Civil Rights Movement, once they got the legislation passed. But he worked on the Poor People's Campaign to call out the evils of capitalism and the evil militarism as well. And one of the biggest things that he was advocate for was ending the Vietnam War and ending U.S. imperialism as we know it. And this is the actual ideology that we've seen capitalist propaganda was in overdrive to make us forget about as the Black community. That's why I wrote about in our first piece how, unfortunately, our older generation embraced Black neoliberalism instead of the Black leftism, which has actually challenged the military-industrial complex and U.S. imperialism. Because if you're just challenging the police state, or if you're just challenging our fascist immigration system or just the U.S. imperialism, but you're not looking at the other one, you're missing a big, giant part of the puzzle. And you are not understanding that the capitalist forces are at play, the reason why that's why it's going overdrive, that they must have more. Like, it's not going to be slowed down. When people ask me why I was going to say I was saying this before even Joe Biden got elected. I said, you're not going to see him crack down the immigration at the border. You're not going to see him slow down U.S. imperialism. You're not going to see the police state ramp down. You're not going to see him actually fight for these things, because these are active complexes that must grow, and capitalism feeds into these kind of things. And when you look at the prison industrial complex, when it comes to prisons, police guard unions, the giant police budget, I mean, there was a story that just came out today how the NYPD, they are already maxed out on their overtime, all right? And this is kind of just a giant racket. And the easiest way to, imperialists found this out hundreds and hundreds of years ago. One of the best ways you can make money is by imposing your capitalist system on another community, whether it be through immigration, right, by imperialism, by invading them and taking all the resources, but having that lower class that you can exploit through their work. And once again, our capitalist system was only able to be sustainable through slavery. So these are the kind of thing that our ruling class understands. And this is why I don't have much sympathy for them, because when I see Joe Biden and the Democratic Party still continue ICE, when I see them still supporting of the giant police budgets, when they're not actually showing us anything, when they are continuing to bomb, and they're bombing people in Syria, they continue to funnel money into these horrific countries like Saudi Arabia instead of actually taking care of our communities. I mean, it's crazy when you think about, we're in the middle of a pandemic, but this is the kind of thing they're focused on. I mean, these are the kind of issues that you can kind of get a guiding principle on how someone is going to govern, just like Medicare for all, U.S. imperialism, where they stand on the police state. Because if you get one of those wrong, that means your guiding principle is completely off. That's why I was able to predict how the Biden administration was going to go. So people who were trying to sell me the idea of his platform, which he backed away from, I was like, you're a joke. He's not going to reform a system that he's responsible for creating. He created ICE. He created our conservative state. So that why I wanted to point out mostly in my article there.
Well, and like, it's just very simple. Like, how can we solve these injustices when the very system is profiting off of these injustices, right? The kids in cages at the border, they're profiting off putting kids in cages. Those facilities are owned by, you know, for-profit prison companies. Yep. You know, it's the same way, you know, with, you know, how can we solve the racial injustice crisis when they're profiting off of locking up predominantly black and brown people for lower level nonviolent offenses, like things like marijuana, which is ridiculous. You know, the for-profit prison industry is profiting off of that. You can use the same argument with all of these endless wars. You know, the defense industry is profiting off of these endless wars and off of invading other countries and stealing their resources, essentially, and exploiting their labor just to enrich the capitalist class back at home. And it's not, let's be clear, it's not the capitalist class who's going over to fight the wars. They're exploiting poor and working class people to go over and fight these endless wars to just enrich the oligarchs back in America. And so when you just realize how connected it all is, and it is essentially all our decrepit capitalist system, which continues to put the endless greed of the ruling class over the basic needs of the people. And especially, you know, black and brown people and people in marginalized communities where, you know, all like you were talking about with the broken windows policing, you know, instead of actually doing something to uplift our struggling communities, they're actually going in and the police is creating more problems exploiting them and terrorizing them and arresting them for basically just trying to survive. You know, you talk about someone selling cigarettes. It's like, people have to survive. And when capitalism continues to displace our jobs, ship our jobs overseas, and just concentrate more and more wealth up into the hands of the ruling class, you know, how do they expect people to survive? And then it's like they're criminalizing poverty. They're criminalizing blackness. They're criminalizing people for just trying to survive.
Yeah, and that's why I attack capitalism. That's why I think what you're doing is important, when you actually call out the problem where it is. I mean, it's very important to have issues that you are focused on and what's important to you, but it all connects. And that's something I always want to stress. That's why I wrote about in my very first article, well, my second article, when I talk about how healthcare is the most pro-black policy. Because, I mean, when you look at the people who are the victims of our healthcare system, the people who are victimized by the capitalist class, who know they can make money off of our communities, it's Big Pharma who charging us more for drugs. We pay the most, and we are the most in medical debt. I mean, once again, these things connect with our current system that we have right now, because these are the things that lead to crime. I mean, once again, studies show, I mean, once again, why Eric Garner was forced to sell loose cigarettes? He was forced to do that because, once again, we have a system where he's being abandoned. I mean, George Floyd was tested positive for COVID before his incident. I mean, if we had a government that didn't abandon people during the COVID crisis, we wouldn't even be in this situation. I mean, when you look at studies that show there was an increase of shoplifting during the COVID-19 saga, that's because people didn't have money to provide. So this is a very basic tenet that activists are preaching when we talk about defund the police and when we talk about common sense, libertarian, socialist policies, because these are actually policies that will transform our society and that will actually increase society and improve not only just economics, but in every other area, for example, just like crime. That's why we say defund the police is a path to abolition. See, this is the funny thing. We understand that the term abolition may turn people off. A lot of people were very supportive of defunding the police, but then once you bring abolition, it brings up apprehension. But you got to understand where we are coming from and what the path we are trying to lead is going to come to. Because what we are advocating for, we're asking for a society where this is why we are anti-capitalist. Because we want to challenge the capitalist class. We want to challenge the billionaire class. We want to take over the means of production. And then once we actually have a system where our neighborhood has great health care, we have community representation, we have actually the criminal justice system that, as we imagine, where we spend money on education, having high quality of life. I mean, I think I'm talking about UBI, health care, living wage. I mean, these are the kind of things that will increase the quality of life of these poor and disenfranchised communities. There wouldn't even be a point where we even need a police. So that's the path of abolition. And that's what we preach, that 10 demands. We are going to reach a point where there's not going to be a need for the police anymore. That the reason we even have a need for the police is, once again, driven by capitalism and the need for the carceral state. They look for people to lock up in their jail cells because they need that. They look to impose fines.
They're making money off of it.
Yeah, they look to impose fines and fees on people because they need to do that. So if you strip away that system, you actually focus on creating a society where you can reduce crime. That is what we can accomplish. Oh, Nick, you're being an idealist. Just look at everywhere else. What other countries spend the amount of insane money that we spend on our police budget? I love that this fact is going around. I heard from my good friend, Forgiving You First, where the NYPD spend over 2 times more than North Korea does on their military. So So when people saying that we're being unrealistic, I'm challenging you to find an example of society that runs well on our giant police budgets and military budgets. They don't exist. So if we actually do with countries that have low crime rates, what they do, like if you look at Japan, you look at a lot of these countries that implement a lot of these policies that will be deemed as socialist over here, that these are the kind of things that you need to do to decrease the crime rate. Common sense policies we need to advocate for first, right?
Well, yeah, and I mean, I think our military budget is about $1 trillion a year, and I think our police budget, our militarized police budget, is over like $100 billion a year. It's absurd. I think one of the things I've noticed is that it's funny that we have to defend idealism or think of idealism as a bad thing. And for me, it's like, no, like, I feel like there's such a lack of an imagination by people. It's like these systems have been around for so long that people can't even imagine what life would be like without capitalism, because they're so indoctrinated to believe that, like, this is the only way, you know, that we have to have these militarized police forces, that we, you know, that we have to have an economy or an economic system that continues to just feed more and more wealth up to the billionaire class. I mean, there was an article out yesterday that just blew my mind. A video game company, I can't remember the name of the company. I think it was Activision, actually. And over the last 2 years, Activision has laid off over 1,000 employees, but just a few days ago gave their CEO a $200 million bonus. So that is what capitalism is: laying off over 1,000 employees and giving one person $200 million. And I feel like I'm taking crazy pills, because a system like this is not sustainable. It's not working for the majority of the people. And is exactly why I am a socialist, and exactly why I believe that inherently capitalism is exploitative. It is rooted in exploiting the labor of the poor and the working class to enrich the ruling class. And it's not needed. You know, the working class should own the means of production. Okay. Every single person in this country should own a piece of their work. It would give them more control over their lives. It'd give them more power, more freedom. It is democracy. You know, this idea that capitalism and democracy can work together, capitalism is antithetical to democracy because it puts the majority of the power in our society in as few hands as possible. I mean, I think we have 3 billionaires now who own more wealth than half of our entire nation. And so it just, it blows my mind that more people don't see where this is going, right? And, you know, if our objective is to save humanity and save the planet, then why are so many people trying to save and protect the very systems that are pushing people down and destroying the planet? You know, capitalism, our racist police system, American imperialism, that is pushing people down in the world. It's not helping people. You know, the big oil companies, they're responsible for 70% of our pollution and burning. And when we burn fossil fuels, that is causing the climate to warm and causing climate catastrophe. And so, you know, it's like, you know, the capitalism is like gasoline for the climate crisis. Yep, yep. And so people aren't seeing how connected all the problems are. And they're rooted in the fact that we have systems that put profits over people.
Yeah,
and it's not sustainable. And I just, I'm grateful for people like you who write articles like this. And, you know, I think we have to go and move the conversation into a big part of all of this. You know, I want to shift to the conversation to our corporate media. Because in the same way that our policing system has been set up to protect the interests of the ruling class, so has our corporate media. You know, one thing I've been saying lately is corporate media is not news. It is propaganda that indoctrinates the masses to accept this cruel, decrepit capitalist system that we live under. And now just 6 corporations, Comcast, NBC Universal, Disney, CBS, Viacom, and AT&T, control 90% of the media outlets in America. That means six media giants control a whopping 90% of what the American people read, watch, and listen to. Objectivity in journalism is an illusion created by the ruling class to give the appearance of balanced news. However, there is no such thing as unbiased news. Journalists who work for these 6 corporations answer to their corporate owners and ultimately serve their agendas. So the corporate media doesn't serve the interests of the people. It serves the interests of the ruling elites by controlling the people and getting them to support our corrupt system and politicians, which in turn serve the interests of the ruling class. You know, it's that old slogan, you control the media, you control the minds. And we saw this firsthand in the Democratic primary when the corporate media outlets had an anti-Bernie bias who was fighting for the working class and a pro-Biden bias who was fighting for the capitalist class. People ask me all the time what the solution to our billionaire-owned corporate media is. You know, what is the answer to it? And the answer is what me and you are doing right now, Nick. It's providing an alternative, which is independent media that is funded by the people, not the billionaire class. Yeah. Nick, what is your reaction to the power that our corporate media has over the people and our corrupt political system? And is this why you helped start Fred Hampton Leftists, which is a new independent media created by Black leftists and funded by everyday people?
Yeah, that was exactly what my mindset was. Now, that's why I tell people that if you're in a position where you can tell a story, I mean, I consider yourself a journalist, and I can't stand, even from people who consider themselves leftists, to have this elitist point of view where people say you can't share this opinion because you don't have this credential. I mean, I'm very open about my background. I'm just some guy that lived in Kansas City who just so happened to got a platform, and I just want to tell my story as it is. And that's very important because as a Black leftist and someone who is anti-establishment minded, it's very frustrating to live, and I'm very happy we had the internet because we are able to connect and we're able to form groups like the Fred Hampton Leftists. But for a long time, I mean, we only see the worst actors, the people who are the most brazen sellouts. They are the people who get elevated in media. I mean, these are people you see, Joy Ann Reads. I mean, these are people who are happy to tap dance on behalf of the Democratic Party and the media establishment and the corporate establishment as a whole, the Dr. Jason Johnsons, and I can go on and on. I mean, no need to call them out. I mean, those are the most obvious offenders, but we see this wreaked all throughout establishment media. I mean, the Black people who feel the need to join the media establishment class. I mean, this was written about by W.B. Du Bois a long time ago. I mean, he wrote about this phenomenon where Black people feel like their need to find emancipation is rooted within political power and joining the forces of oppression. He wrote about that. I mean, this is a problem that goes as far back as the slave trade. I mean, people join the forces of oppression. But these are my overall point. These are the people who are elevating the media. And so you never hear our perspective. And this has led directly to the rise of Black neoliberalism. I mean, we see how Dr. Cornel West, a tree in Harvard, I mean, he's one of the few voices they let on, but they don't let those voices usually on corporate media, and they don't allow us to share our voices. These are perspectives that you never will see. I mean, there's a large amount of young Black people who are not comfortable with the Democratic Party, who we didn't like Joe Biden, but according to media narratives, you would never hear that story. I mean, even in the polls, Bernie Sanders won with the youth Black. You never hear that kind of, you never hear that story. The same go with anti-establishment Latinos. The same go for Native Americans and Muslims, a lot of different disenfranchised communities. The only people you see on corporate media, the people who are pushing a narrative. And I, once again, this is something I like about what you advocate for and what I advocate for all the time. Once again, just connect all the issues. Put all this together. And once again, this is just an inherent flaw of capitalism. And this is why I openly say U.S. is the most propagandized country in the world. And people always, someone side-eyed me when I say that. And I always say, yes, I said what I said. Because at least when you have state-sponsored media, I mean, you talk to these people in these countries all the time, they at least acknowledge, they know there's propaganda. I mean, people in China know that they're watching propaganda out of China. And people are in Brazil, they know they may be watching some pro-Brazil TV. I mean, Russia TV, they're not shy about where the loyalties lie. But you have people who actually watch Rachel Maddow, Joy-Ann Reid. Like, they actually watch these people and they think they're getting real news. These people are clowns. And once again, it's not just liberal media, but the same with Fox News. I mean, if you look at the giant media apparatus, people watch Sean Hannity, then they get in the real news on that side as well. And when you combine all this plus propaganda and the fact that, I mean, a lot of these countries that are propagandized, at least they're getting healthcare. I mean, we are propagandized right. into thinking that having healthcare is a bad thing. We are right. propagandized to the point where we think having a large segment of the homeless population is a acceptable thing in the richest country in the world. Like, once again, I talk about people who need to be serious about these policies. I mean, Austin is just one example of a city. I saw this article not too long ago that blew my mind, where they actually decided to reallocate part of the police budget to homeless and to housing the homeless. And now they actually decrease crime in that area as well. And there's studies that constantly show that when you actually provide housing to these people, that actually saves money. So it seems like these people are not interested in empirical data like that. They're more interested in promoting a straight up capitalism. They don't want to reduce property prices. That's why they actually rather invest money on anti-homelessness infrastructure that costs more money. These programs that they implement cost more money than it would just to rent them out a hotel.
And they don't tackle the root of the problem. Exactly. You know, which is our decrepit system that continues to exploit the poor and the working class to enrich the ruling class. And you're hitting some great points. One thing that drives me crazy, you know, when we talk about the corporate media debate, is how liberals will correctly point out that Fox News is billionaire-owned propaganda, while they are watching CNN and MSNBC, which is also billionaire-owned corporate media propaganda. Nick, why do you think many liberals who are college educated have such a blind spot when it comes to recognizing their own media biases? And do you think it has something to do with the fact that they're profiting off this decrepit capitalist system? So they don't want any major changes to it. You know, are liberals the ones that are really standing in the way of progress?
I always tell people that MSNBC is no different from Fox News. They just play a slightly different script, but they have the same objective. I mean, let's look at it this way. I mean, have you seen the liberal defenses of Andrew Cuomo and how they attack sexual assault victims who have attacks on powerful white men? Look at the way they attack Tara Reid and Lindsey Boyan and a lot of these people. And tell me, what is the difference between that and how MAGA attacked Christine Blasey Ford? It's not this. It's literally, quite literally, the same thing. So why are they conditioned to do that? They are conditioned to do that by the media that they consume, the MSNBCs, or if you're a right winger, it's Fox News. So they condition them to think in the same way. They just fight for a different team. So why do you have these people that push insane conspiracy theories on the right wing? Why do they believe these crazy things like QAnon? They believe that stuff because Fox News, one news network, and all that stuff programs them. But why do you have liberals that believe insane, unhinged conspiracy theories like Russiagate? And I see people say stuff like Julian Assange and Ryan Knight and Jimmy Dore is a Russian asset. Like, if you actually sit down and think about it, do you actually understand how unhinged that is? Like, what you are actually, like, people call me a Russian asset. I'm like, bro, I'm just some guy in Kansas City. Like, do you know how crazy you sound? Like,
I've been called a Russian asset over 1,000 times. Yes. Because I want everyone in this country to have healthcare.
Yes.
And that's because your crime. I disagree with our decrepit capitalist system that continues to funnel more and more money up to the ruling class while the poor and the working class can barely keep their heads above water.
And that's why you make a good point comparing the two. Because they, once again, the same liberal class will like to think themselves as being better than MAGA, right? Well, they, like, they don't actually believe in the crazy stuff that MAGA believe. And that's why I'm glad that you titled two get together, MSNBC and Fox News crowd. Because if you actually look at the content that they actually, what they produce and what they actually, the messaging they actually put out there, what their willingness to defend powerful, rich, white war criminals, the same way that Republicans are willing to defend their powerful, rich white war criminals, it's the same thing. They're just different teams. So that's why I want people to acknowledge. And that's why you see that same audience mirror our movement, simply because, as you said, we just want healthcare. That was our biggest crime.
Yeah, I mean, the essentially, that to me is what's so just ridiculous about American politics, is that liberals and conservatives think they're so different from each other. And they're so busy fighting each other that they can't see that, like, they're actually advocating for pretty much the same thing. They're both advocating for the continuation of our decrepit capitalist system. They're both advocating to continue these endless wars. And they're both supporting two capitalist parties. You know, both the Republicans and the Democrats are two capitalist parties who just want to continue to maintain the status quo in America. Despite the fact that we can see that the status quo is failing the majority of the people. We have 92 million Americans who are either underinsured or uninsured. We have 140 million Americans who were poor or low income. And what I think is the most egregious stat right now, and so I keep repeating this, the black-white wealth gap in America today is as wide as it was back in 1968 during the Civil Rights Movement. We haven't made any progress for black people economically in this country in the last half century. And so when we talk about things like capitalism, it is inherently racist. And it is inherently racist because opportunities are not afforded to black people in the same way that they're afforded to white people in this society. And a lot of that connects back into how we started the podcast, when we have an entire policing system that is set up to not to protect black neighborhoods, but to criminalize them and to terrorize them and to keep them in poverty. And so that is why we have to continue to do what Fred Hampton did, which is why I'm so glad you named your new media, independent media organization, Fred Hampton Leftist, because what Fred Hampton was doing was he was building a rainbow coalition. He was bringing together white, black, and brown working class people under socialist principles, under Marxist principles. You know, he wasn't doing it under vague populism. Yeah. You know, let's bring the right and left together with just some vague anti-establishment populist message. No, it was actually about bringing them together under a socialist platform that puts the means of production in the people's hands and puts this country back into the people's hands where it belongs, and gets it out of the corporation's hands, out of the billionaire's hands, and out of these ruling elites' hands who own both parties and continue to just get us fighting over these kind of surface things while they're rigging the system against us. And no progress is made. I just can't get over it. In 50 years, we've made no progress on the disparity in the black-white wealth gap. That is unacceptable, and everyone on the left should focus on that. And a party like the Democratic Party, which says it's the party, you know, of that black people are the backbone of the party, that's a great platitude. But if that's the case, why aren't you fighting for reparations? Why, Joe Biden, are you fighting to increase police funding instead of fighting to defund the police and shift resources into black and brown communities? And why, after the George Floyd's murder, and we saw the biggest protest in American history, the Black Lives Matter protest last summer, why was your response to kneel in kente cloth in the Capitol building? That was your response, some little symbolic gesture, instead of actually fighting for policies that are going to improve the material conditions of black people and reduce the racial wealth gap? It's absurd to me. So we have to keep coming together and fighting against these injustices, because we've seen that both political parties, the Republicans don't want to do anything. In fact, they want to demonize, you know, people of color and immigrants and use them as scapegoats to radicalize their supporters. But then the Democratic Party, they're not doing much better. They just want to provide platitudes and lip service to people's pain and to people's problems, co-opt all of our social movements without actually fighting for the policies that we're advocating for. We're stuck in the system where we've got two parties that essentially, you know, represent the corporations and the oligarchs, and the people are left just fighting for ourselves. And that's what we have to do. We have to fight to liberate ourselves. And we do that by studying people like Fred Hampton, who brought everyone together with socialist policies.
Yep. And that's why I was very calculated when I put this group together, because my main thing, because I feel blessed every day to even have the platform that I am. Because like I said, I'm just an average guy, and I didn't have really any online presence until like 2018. And I only did it until the Brady campaign. So I'm like, my main thing as a citizen journalist is I want to give more people voices. So that's why, we put Fred Hampton, because when we look at what he stands for and what he advocated for, what the Black Panthers has done, that kind of the main guiding principle that we have in our politics. And we're proud of our good boy, Rome, is actually who is engaging in direct mutual aid. I mean, he's running a drive to give people clothes and give people food in Detroit, Michigan. And this is the kind of actions that you're going to see advocating for and us promoting. I mean, we're going to be promoting a lot of mutual aid efforts and a lot of local stuff, because politics is directly local. And I love that you bring up the white racial income inequality gap, because I mean, we talk about how the Democrats don't really fight for anything, but I mean, I always take it to the next level. Well, I say they are actually actively complicit with this, because I mean, I look at the person who is in charge now. I mean, even if you look at the vice president and the harm that she has done in the Black community. So not only do the Democrats don't actually fight for our community, they are the no one harm to our community, because that racial income inequality gap doesn't exist for no reason. I want people to understand that that's literally a direct result of policy. And what policy did that come from? That policy come from trickle-down economics that Democrats was complicit with and that Joe Biden was complicit with. So I explained earlier in my article, Defund Police. Once again, I'm not just trying to harp back on Defund the Police, but I'm telling you guys that these issues are all connected. So one of the reasons why the racial income inequality gap is as bad as it was in the Civil Rights Movement, because what they did was simply adjust. You had white supremacists join the police forces. And once again, I pointed out earlier how civil asset forfeiture is largely impacted, that impacts the Black community. So what we do, we build our wealth, and then we have a fascist police system who continue to knock us down with, once again, the taxes I was talking about, regressive taxes. So once again, I'm not harping on defund the police because I love talking about this, but this is part of the racial income inequality gap. So it's like, how I can't talk about any issue of the Black community without this somehow being brought up. And if you're actually talking about Black issues and you're talking about issues that are going on in our community and you're not understanding these, how these things are connected, that's shame on you, because once again, not just defund the police, help Medicare for all, another policy I talk about, another policy I wrote about. Why do you think the racial wealth gap exists? So, well, once again, Black Americans, despite us being 13% of the population, we have 31% of the country's medical debt. So we pay insane, the highest rate in terms of medical debt. Black women pay the most disproportionately in terms of health care, and we have some of the worst child infant mortality rates. I mean, we die early from cancer because we don't have cancer prevention, where our life expectancy is lower than almost anyone else. I think it's lower by white males by like 8 years. I mean, these things are things that actually go through our family. I mean, my grandfather passed away. I mean, my grandpa, I mean, I'm lucky he lived to be 78. But I mean, I'm seeing a lot of the war criminals, Henry Kissinger, 97. I mean, I guess I would love, if my grandfather, who was a great law-abiding citizen, who was a great family man, I would love if he had the opportunity to live to be 97. But Henry Kissinger has a different level of health care than my grandfather had. I mean, it's famous in my family. We don't go to the doctor. My grandma told she never like going to the hospital because they know it costs too damn much. I mean, that's something that's ingrained into the Black community. Not just us, but I talk to my Latino friends as part of their community as well. So these kind of things has a large implication. And I brought up medical debt. But why do you think that's a thing? Joe Biden. And people talk about the crime bill, which is important. I know I'm going long here, but the crime bill is important. But the bankruptcy bill is as important when you talk impact, because that's the financial impact. So when you talk about medical debt, Joe Biden voted against amendments that would ease the burdens of those who suffer from medical debt. That's an anti-Black bill. So when I say that Joe Biden is one of the most anti-Black public figures in the modern era. I say modern era because I don't want to get into debate when we talk about slavery and that kind of stuff. I think I could make the argument, but there's no point. So I simplify it. When you talk about the modern era, I'm talking about maybe post Jim Crow, if you want to say that. I would say we never left, but I'm gonna simplify it. So what other public figure has done more damage to Joe Biden? With the crime bill, the bankruptcy bill, his responsibility, him going to bat with the banks, the credit card companies. These are the people who literally was criminally kicking us out of our homes. When you look at the grand scheme of things, what actually impacted the Black community, the health crisis, the housing crisis, the crisis with the prison industrial complex, these are all things that Joe Biden, he wasn't just some guy who signed the papers. He's actually wrote these policies. So
he's the architect.
Yeah, I never felt like I was unreasonable for saying we should not support a party that would get behind this guy. Because I was shocked to even the concept that he would even win. I mean, there's so many problems with the primary. But in any sane society, a scumbag like Joe Biden should have lost by a landslide. So I won't apologize if I'm willing to leave a party that is willing to elect someone who is probably one of the most anti-Black public figures in modern American history. So, and if we seen results that were different, where we had a party that was like, okay, we understand our past sins. We understand we should never support these names, so we're going to make a change for the better. For example, get behind Bernie. That's not the only thing, but that's just one thing. But these are the kind of things where, like, okay, at least I know they're trying to get better. But the fact that they did everything they can to crush this movement that was trying to fix these injustices that was going on, and even if Bernie would have won, that would have been a big uphill battle. But that was just the first step. But the fact that they was willing to crush it, or the movement the way they did, I'm like, okay, you can't forgive me for being willing to move on for this party and wanting to advocate for third party drain choice voting and direct mutual aid action instead of just standing up for electoral politics. So that was kind of my spiel on that. And that's what kind of, that was the mindset of our group. But go ahead, Ryan.
No, that's exactly why I left the Democratic Party last year. I couldn't, after being a Democrat for 18 years, I couldn't live with the hypocrisy anymore.
Exactly.
And the gaslighting. It's so blatant and brazen. Like, here they have, you know, here they say they care about Black lives and Black people are the backbone of the Democratic Party, when they're nominating and doing everything they can to rig it against Bernie, whose policies would have actually closed the racial wealth gap, to rig it for someone like Joe Biden, who's the architect of mass incarceration.
Yeah, says everything.
And the crime bill, the bankruptcy bill, voted for the Iraq war, and just his whole life for 47 years, Joe Biden has propped up this decrepit capitalist system. And to think that the person who propped it up is going to change it and bring the systemic change that we need at this moment in our history is insanity. And for me, like, that's why for me, the Democrats are actually in many ways more dangerous than the Republican Party, because I know the Republican Party is dangerous. They tell me they're dangerous every day. They announce themselves. They're like, yeah, we're racist. So what? You know, yeah, more war. You know, we're going to give tax breaks to the billionaire class. Yeah, we're predatory capitalists. I mean, they brag about how greedy and racist and corrupt they are. But it's the Democrats who fool people and deceive people with all these endless platitudes of hope and change, and then turn around when they're in power and govern for Wall Street, giant corporations, and the billionaire class. And that to me is more dangerous, because, you know, they'll say things like they're the party of healthcare. And so people think, oh, help is coming. You know, we're going to get health care finally for the 92 million Americans who are underinsured or uninsured, which disproportionately affects Black people, like you pointed out, who carry more medical debt than white people. Well, turns out the party that says they're the party of health care is actually the party of for-profit, predatory private health insurance, which was the Affordable Care Act. Which, you know, when the last time Democrats had power and had all three branches of had controlled the entire government, you know, the House, the Senate, and the White House, they used that to pass the Affordable Care Act, which I don't know if a lot of people know this, but when they wrote that legislation back in 2010, 4,000 corporate lobbyists descended on Washington to write the Affordable Care Act. It was a giant gift to the big insurance companies. Yet then people like Obama go on TV and Hillary and Nancy Pelosi, and they dress up this predatory healthcare system that left 27 million people uninsured. And like I said earlier, 92 million underinsured. They dress it up like it's this great thing when actually since it was passed, premiums have increased. And we're seeing that it's not producing good health outcomes in the coronavirus pandemic. More people have died in our country than in any other country. And so this is what the Democrats do. They say they're the party of healthcare, and then they fight against Medicare for All because they're funded by the giant insurance companies. Or they say that they're against war, and they vote for the Iraq war like most Democrats do. And just last year, more recent, they voted against defunding our military by just 10%.
Yep.
Democrats control the House. They voted last year against defunding the Pentagon by just 10% because they're owned by the defense industry, just like the Republicans. And then you can go to something like climate change. They say, oh, we believe in climate change. Again, they got the platitude down. Well, Joe Biden doesn't support a Green New Deal. He's actually approved 31 new fracking permits since he's been elected because they take money from the big oil companies just like Republicans do.
Exactly.
They just use nicer platitudes. And so again, it deceives the people into thinking change is happening in our society because the Democrats use nice words, but they don't back up their words with actually the policies that we need and the massive structural reforms that we need to do something about our decrepit capitalist system. And I would now go so far as to argue that the system can't even be reformed, that we need to, you know, the way to rescue and save America is to just get rid of this decrepit capitalist system that is rooted in exploitation and oppression and replace it with a socialist economy where the people own the means of production and control the economy, not the ruling class.
Yeah, and that's why I think what you do is valuable because people kind of saw your evolution in real time. The way you pointed out, the way you said you just got tired of platitudes, when you actually understand the crimes of the Democratic Party, and not just the platitude gets old, they become insulting. So what I'm talking about is when you actually understand how the 2008 financial crisis actually happened and how that led to the tanking of black wealth and how Obama and the Democratic Party was a part of that. So it's like, and this is the administration that Joe Biden was a part of. So instead of, back in the day, I was supportive of Barack Obama and the Democratic Party. The last time I voted for Lesser Two Evils was 2012, because that's what around the time I started to teach myself more about foreign policy. I mean, I was radicalized by the Iraq War and George Bush, so I always had an anti-imperialist point of view. I just was misled by the media into thinking that the Democratic Party was that. I was misled by the media, once we were talking about that before, that the Democrats was the class for the party for the working class people, and they were the party that was best for black people. But when you look into the financial crisis, you realize that Barack Obama had a cabinet that was picked up by Wall Street, that was revealed by WikiLeaks, and Eric Holder was literally a Wall Street plant. I mean, this is openly written about, and I mean, mainstream corporate news did studies on this. I mean, Eric Holder was a plant from Wall Street that was sent in by Obama to protect the Wall Street goons. And then once again, I always want to tie this back to my community because I advocate for my community. I stand with solidarity with everyone, but I can only speak to my experience as a black man. I mean, if you look at black wealth and why that tanked, our wealth tanked because we had a lot of wealth in our homes. And we were scammed by Wall Street because you had a lot of Wall Street fraudsters who literally was betting against our mortgages. I mean, and
these
kind of hedge funds. And Eric Holder and their friends were complicit with this. So they got their government in with Barack Obama. That's why they put so much money into him. And they decided not to prosecute these people who was illegally foreclosing on black people. Once again, black people were just one minority of this. There was a giant disproportionate part of this. But once again, I can speak on behalf of my community. So they was being illegally foreclosed on by the government that Joe Biden and Barack Obama was head of, and they were complicit with this. So they decided not to go after the bankers, but they didn't do anything to bail out black homeowners. Everyone in the black community, at least most people, you're fortunate if you don't, but everyone I know have a story of someone who was impacted by this. So, and this is what happened. This is the failure of the capitalists, to bring it back into the central theme of this conversation. I mean, because this is why our wealth continued to lag behind white wealth. Because when you look at the actual policies, I mean, we always had some sort of form of socialism for the rich, corporate socialism, and monies that go back to the white community, whether it be our farm grants. A lot of the policies that FDR implemented the black community wasn't included in a lot of these policies. So white wealth was grown by these socialist policies that they demonized. Meanwhile, black Americans, we have rugged individualism. And that's what MLK was speaking about. So once again, we got corporate socialism, like the corporate bailouts. But meanwhile, the black community, among other disenfranchised communities, we are left to fend on our own. But despite this, because we are soldiers and we got a lot of heart, despite the fact that we live in a system that is stacked against us, we build wealth despite all of this. So we buy homes. We finally start to increase. See our money start to spend, go up. Then what happens? The economy crash because capitalism is a joke. And capitalism crashes every 10 years.
Right.
And that's me being literally very conservative.
Like, capitalism has to be bailed out by the government every 10 years. So, and people don't see that relationship between the government, which is essentially an arm of these giant corporations who own our politicians. And so, I mean, look at them. They can take as much risk as they want. They can, like you said, bet against black people losing their homes, crash an economy, not get prosecuted.
And they make a lot of money.
Get completely bailed out. They get with our money. And there's no consequences. And then the system just continues.
And check the pattern.
It's insane to me.
And check the pattern. This is how the pattern works. Once again, this is why I call it, that's why I call capitalism a racist system. Because the pattern works is, once again, we fight hard despite the fact that we have a system that's stacked against us. We build wealth. The economy crashed in the working class through austerity politics. We bear the brunt of the economy crashing. Meanwhile, how do we legislate? We give giant bailouts to corporations. Once again, there are some black people that are doing well. There's some black oligarchs out there. But who do you think is the vast majority of the people that are benefiting from these bailouts? It's white America. So once again, I'm not trying to make anything about race, but this is how I'm just explaining to you people who are shocked about that fact that Ryan brought up, how the fact that we got a racial income inequality that worse than the civil rights movement. I tell people that fact, Ryan, they are shocked. And I'm like, bro, I can explain to you why that is. And this is one of the reasons why it is. And it's something that the Democratic Party and Barack Obama, not only did they not fight to stop this, they are complicit with this stuff. Like, this is the kind of stuff I explain to people. And this is how you get people to think outside of two-party duopoly. And that's why they dislike what you do, because you're like a live version of that. Like, people have seen when you were supportive of the party and seen you get out of that. I always joke that if I was on Twitter, if I had a platform, like back in my shit lib days, that people would have been, quote, they would be had my screenshots up there as well, because I had a lot of dumb opinions. But what we do, we speak and we educate each other on the issues. That's why, I mean, I'll give you props because you were on the platform and speak to a Fred Hampton leftist, someone who can tell politics from our perspective. Because once again, to bring it back to that theme in corporate media, I mean, are you going to see anyone, any black liberal on MSNBC and CNN explain to you black income inequality the way I just did? Are you going to hear any of this kind of like breakdown on corporate news or New York Times, Washington Post, or any, like, take them and their podcast group, because they got a lot of podcasts too. Or are you going to hear this on their podcast, even if they have a black guest, because they're not going to invite those people on? That's why I plead. I mean, listen to people of color, independent content creator. I mean, once again, Ryan Nye is a great host here as well, because he won the platform. People like us that can tell these stories that are not told by the corporate media. So that's why I'm just happy to be on it. And I'm glad I had the opportunity to kind of tell that from my perspective, because I think it's important to tell the story of the economic side and the state violence side. And that's what we're going to expect. I mean, we're going to launch on April 1st with the Fred Hampton leftists, and that's when you're going to see a lot of content coming from us. And that's the kind of politics that you can expect from our perspective, which the liberal class, they don't like to hear from it. And this is why they don't show on the shows. I'm already surprised now about people who are trying to attack and smear us as a group. But I'm like, I kind of expect it, because they don't want to hear from our perspective. They'd rather attack us as a bad faith actor, even though we're just telling our stories, because they can't actually handle the substance of what we're saying.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And do you think that what always strikes me is like when I was in the Democratic Party and I hadn't kind of had my awakening and realized that the Democrats were as complicit as the Republicans in maintaining our decrepit capitalist system and the racist police state and our endless imperialism, people loved me when I said what they wanted to hear,
yep.
Right? But the moment I like kind of woke up and was like, whoa, the Democrats aren't really who
works,
they
right?
say they are. They're actually supporting the majority of the policies that the Republicans support. They just kind of dress up their corruption better and act like they're not funded by Wall Street when they're funded by Wall Street. But what I always just found fascinating is me just kind of waking up and realizing this and just sharing this. It's like the same people who before loved me now hated me and with such a passion. And it said more about them than it said about me.
Yep.
I'm just kind of waking up, sharing my experience, finding information. You know, you can go fact check all this. You know, the Wall Street gave more money last year in 2020.
Yourself too. They just go after you for just sharing your perspective.
Yeah, that's it. And they won't fact check anything. Like, I could share something, like I've shared a lot of times on my show, on Twitter, that Wall Street gave more money to Joe Biden and the Democrats in 2020 than they gave to Donald Trump and the Republicans. And now that they control all three branches of government, doesn't that concern you that they control our entire government? They're funded by Wall Street, and the working class and the poor are struggling. You don't see a conflict of interest there? And they will deny objective reality. They will not even go try to fact check it. They'll be like, no, the Republicans are the party of Wall Street. It's like, no, not in 2020 they weren't, because Wall Street gave more to Democrats. And so there's just, they, liberals put themselves in this bubble. They only get their news from places that they can hear comforting platitudes like CNN or MSNBC. But honestly, I think what they're not realizing is that right now, like, the truth might be uncomfortable, but the truth is that, like, America's failing. We are a crumbling empire. We are a dying empire. And that this economy, which continues to funnel more and more money up to the ruling class and screw over the poor and the working class and communities of color, is not sustainable. And if we don't start thinking big picture, if we don't start fighting for bolder solutions, if we don't start fighting for socialist policies, like, shit's gonna get really, really, really bad. And I think, you know, a lot of them just thought Trump was an anomaly, that, like, oh, okay, we'll just, you know, he's the problem, we'll just get rid of him and everything will be great again. Who does that remind you of, right? It's the same kind of thinking of the MAGA who thought, oh, well, you know, Trump made everything great again. They think that now about Joe Biden, when Trump was just the symptom of the problem, you know? And our problem is our decrepit capitalist system. It's the system. And liberals don't want to do anything to the system. And that's what really scares me. And our last segment, I want to ask you about the American Rescue Plan. Because, you know, in this moment, we need, I would argue that we need to get away from this entire decrepit capitalist system and move to a socialist economy. But liberals don't even want to, like, put strong social reforms on our system to kind of give people reprieve. And you look at the American Rescue Plan. I mean, the relief in the American Rescue Plan is less than the $2,000 checks that Biden and the Democrats promised. And it's temporary. There are no structural reforms like a living wage or even a $15 minimum wage or reparations or Medicare for all or monthly universal basic income to treat the real disease plaguing our nation, which is capitalism. But of course, that's not stopping the Democrats from selling the American Rescue Plan to the public as if it is the New Deal, when in reality, it's less than the bare minimum and more broken promises from Democrats. Nick, what is your reaction to the American Rescue Plan and the fact that during a moment of historic injustice and inequality, the Democratic Party, who controls the entire government, is still refusing to fight for systemic changes to address the deeper inequities in our society? And is it time for the left to move on from the Democratic Party and build our own movements and party?
Yeah, I mean, you've seen the same thing with the Syria bombing. This is why I say the United States is one of the most propagandized countries in the world. I mean, once the American Rescue Plan was signed into law, you had massive amount of propaganda, almost like they was giving the script from the Biden administration itself, where you're seeing the same uncritical analysis on this program, and where you have them just saying that it's going to reduce poverty, it's going to be the greatest thing ever. I mean, even though, I mean, what are you going to do with all the people who owed money on back rent? What about all the people who are going homeless? I mean, there's so many people that are being left out of this bill. And not only that, this is what the capitalists always do. Once again, they are masters of propaganda. I mean, do you guys see how they actually measure poverty in this country? It's a joke. And anyone who is considering themselves left of center, who's doing any sort of apology tour and pretending that this is something that we should be super excited about, I mean, this is nothing but a bare minimum. And if you feel relief from this, you should take solace in that, and you should acknowledge that this is a great moment, that you are getting relief from your government the way they always should be. But this moment should be used for you to start asking the question, why can't we get more of this kind of stuff? Because if you look at the kind of money that the billionaire class has made, mostly because of the policies that the ruling class has implemented in order to increase their wealth, if you just take the money that the billionaires has gained since the beginning of the pandemic, and the number is only worse since I read it, because this data is only about a few weeks old. I mean, if you take the amount of money the billionaires made, you can pay every single American $3,000. I mean, these are the kind of things that you can do with very common sense economics and progressive economics. So now we are seeing the death of Reaganism to the point where, I mean, we had a neoliberal corporate class that tried their best to still implement it and prop it up. I mean, it's funny because the same people who was apologizing and pretending this was the greatest plan ever were the same people who was telling Joe Biden he should keep his only a $600 check. So which is it? Are you advocated for this or not? But the good news is that people are starting to realize that the Reagan economic philosophy, the philosophy of trickle-down economics that Joe Biden had been a proud champion of his entire career, and which is why at the end of the day, I won't accept any other narrative than Joe Biden and Kamala Harris blocked the $15 minimum wage because they could have got that done if they wanted to. So I don't want to hear any
And that's
excuses.
A structural reform. That's like a reform that will last and actually lift people up, whereas just giving people a one-time check is temporary. It's not going to last more than a few months, right? And so that's the problem with the bill. It's not like there's no structural, deep, lasting change in it. It's just temporary stuff. Even the child tax credit is temporary. And so when they talk about they're reducing poverty, maybe for a few months they're reducing poverty, but not long lasting.
Yep. And once again, I always tell people to preach the truth. If you get some relief on this program, that's great and acknowledge that. But just realize that compared to what the billionaire class has received and compared to what other citizens and other countries have received, we have received nothing compared to what other countries have received. I mean, there have been countries that were giving their citizens monthly UIs up to $2,000 per month. And we are getting these scraps compared to what corporate America has given us. I mean, throughout the course of COVID, if you look at the income inequality stats, I mean, we talk about black income inequality, but a lot of these numbers that we have quoted was as of 2015 to 2016. I mean, I'm pretty sure you know that. I'm pretty sure most people know that because, I mean, when you do these studies, there's only so long you can study that. God knows what it's like now. I'm telling you guys, like, it's good. Like when you look at the COVID relief and how the government structured that, I mean, there was an insane amount of black small businesses that went out of business because they were getting denied COVID relief protection that a lot of these corporations, they didn't deserve. Nancy Pelosi and her husband was one of them. And so it's funny how they got their money they need, and a lot of these ruling class people. This is how deep the corruption of capitalism is, because they pay these politicians, and then the politicians are more likely to give them relief money when they need it. I mean, there's constant examples of that, not only just on the Republican side, but on the Democratic side as well. It's a two-party duopoly level of corruption. But this is how capitalism works. I mean, black businesses bear the brunt of the COVID crash. We didn't get bailout, but meanwhile, you got tax breaks given to the massive billionaires, and the bailout given to them. So I want people to understand that this bill, even with them pretending that it's going to reduce poverty, I mean, this is nothing compared to what our government had been giving to the corporate class. And the idea that this is some sort of amazing spring, shattering money on the working class, this is not even like that relief check. That's not even like a mortgage. That's not even a rent for a lot of people in some areas of the country. I mean, I'm looking at the scale they use for poverty, and I was looking at the 3-household to 4-household range. Because I made that amount of money. It's not a lot of money. I'm blessed that I live in a low cost of living area where I don't spend a ton of money on rent and like a lot of people on the East and West Coast do. But I'm looking at the 3-4 family household. So let's assume you're a single mother of 2 kids. And they say the poverty rate for you is $21,000. I made $21,000 before. And I'm a single male with a low cost of living. And I was still struggling to get by. So the idea that we can... A single mother or two is out of poverty with $21,000. That's lunacy to me. And we've seen the capitalist class reduce what it means to be in poverty. The Trump even tried to do that when he was touting the tax cut for the rich. Because when he did a tax cut for the rich, he was trying to say, this is why I reduce poverty. But they were lowering the poverty. This is what the capitalists do to get people to acknowledge that our system isn't failing. I mean, the dam is open now, though, because we've seen people are being way more open to socialism, but people are not falling for the propaganda no more. And honestly, at the end of the day, Trump chipped a lot of people to the left, because a lot of people seen like, okay, the government can do more. And this BS about socialism being evil is BS, because if you understand how progressive economics work, if we had a monthly relief check that was going out to every single American at the beginning of this pandemic, instead of just these one-time checks that were nothing, you could have spurred and kept these small businesses alive, because you've been spending money there. And this is how economics work. You spend, and that's how you generate revenue. That's how you get tax revenue. Trickle-down economics is a fraud, and a lot of Democrats, they still believe in it. They pretend they don't, but if you look at the way they govern in a trickle-down economic way. That's why they still are big advocates of these giant corporate bailouts instead of fighting for a $15 minimum wage.
Right. And well, in the capitalist class, they own all our politicians in both parties. So the reason the laws get written to favor the capitalist class and the ruling class is because they own our politicians. And the poor and the working class and the black community don't have politicians advocating and going to the mat for them to fight for the $15 minimum wage, or to fight for monthly relief, or to fight for reparations, and to fight to shift our economy from this predatory capitalist economy to a long-term sustainable socialist economy that actually, you know, takes care and meets the people's basic needs. You know, we don't have politicians like that in Washington. Both of the parties represent the capitalist class. Neither of the parties represent the working class. And maybe the Democrats represent, you know, the poor and the working class with platitudes, but platitudes don't put food on anyone's table. Platitudes don't pay the rent. Yep. And so we're coming to a moment in history where, like, platitudes aren't enough. We need true fundamental change. And I don't see it happening with either of these parties. And so that's why people in the left now, like yourself and myself, we're starting to look outside of the political system into building our own power and to fighting for things like ranked choice voting, which I know you're passionate about and fighting for, because that will empower, you know, leftist parties, and also just building dual power where we're not even worried about electoral politics, and we're building up mutual aid in our communities and building up our own infrastructure to help the poor and the working class. Because as we see, the government is just, it cannot be counted on to be that safety net that it needs to be. And, you know, I want to, I could talk to you all day, Nick. We're going.
We're
a little over time here, but yeah. I can't end the show. I want to talk a little bit about what happened yesterday and the mass shooting that happened in Atlanta, because it targeted three Asian-owned businesses, massage parlors. He murdered eight people, six of them Asian women, and there has been a wave of hate crimes and violence. There's been over 4,000 incidents reported in the past year against the Asian American community since the start of the pandemic. And I want to kind of get your take on this. Do you think that a lot of the racist rhetoric from the former president and the conservatives has been kind of a catalyst for this?
Yeah, absolutely. And people, this is unfortunate because I want to get into a place in society where people don't put too much thought in and treat politicians like celebrities, but we're not at that point yet. The reality of the situation is when you have someone who is in public office, someone who has a large amount of power and public influence like Donald Trump, and he ramp up tensions and trying to put all the blame on China for COVID-19. These are the kind of things that people take to heart because they are the leader. I mean, the leaders, unfortunately, can shape public consciousness. But this is another thing I want people to acknowledge. And now, once again, I tie everything to policy because that's largely what I like to focus on. But I challenge people to challenge whenever you see U.S. propaganda being done in all its forms against the Asian community. I mean, look at the Democrat Party. I mean, Trump, you brought Trump accurately because actually he did bring up a lot of tensions. But you had Joe Biden. He was running against Trump saying he was being weak on China. I mean, you had Joe Biden, you had Kamala Harris, who fearmongers, and you had the media allies who fearmongers and constantly attack North Korea. And once again, I'm not giving a shining endorsement to anyone here, but one large reason why you have anti-Asian sentiment is because, once again, I always tie the two-party duopoly together. The Republicans are awful, but whenever you see people repeating U.S. propaganda surrounding China and demonizing them as some sort of evil empire, and we got people who demonizing North Korea as an evil empire, I mean, these people haven't done anything to me. I mean, they never called me the N-word. They never been racist to me. I mean, they may have problems in their own country, but a lot of anti-Asian sentiment you can see based on the anti-China propaganda. Not only just came from Trump, but also came from the liberal class and come from U.S. imperialism as a whole, where you have people who will just believe anything that come from an Asian country. And that's why you have people that believe crazy things about citizens in China and citizens in North Korea. And these things have always been debunked in real time. We're like, oh, I didn't know that wasn't true. It's like one of the things where you just hear people repeat it because there's a lot of bias there as well. I mean, people always ask me, like, well, I was like, bro, if you're friendly to me, I want to work with you. It's whatever. Because to me, you got to prove beyond benefit of doubt that you're not racist. There are a lot of people who think that just because they are liberal or just because they're part of the Democrat Party that we're supposed to assume they're not racist. I mean, the Amy Cooper Democrats are a good example of that. So, I mean, a lot of you people who repeat a lot of this U.S. propaganda meant to demonize. I use China and Asia and China and North Korea because that was the best example at the current. But these are things that have been happening for a long time. When it comes to the Vietnamese, when we need to demonize them, we did it to them. I mean, whenever we need to demonize a culture, our corporate media does that. And that's a part of U.S. imperialism. So I stand in solidarity. And this is what we represent at the Fred Hampton Leftist, we stand in solidarity with the Latino community, the Muslim community, the Asian community, the Palestinians. I mean, any single class that's being victimized, we stand in solidarity with. But when it comes to actually analyzing society, I consider myself to be a society critic. I mean, we got to look at the hard root of what this really is about. So stand in solidarity with my Asian brothers and sisters. But once again, this is rooted in this sentiment is grown from harsh U.S. imperialism. Once again, the right wing is super guilty of this as well, and that's why I want to emphasize as well. But both teams play a role in this, and I want people to acknowledge this. And this is why I do everything I can to advocate to lift the voices of people who will dispel these myths that lead to these kind of mindsets that people have on Asian Americans and people of color, right?
Yeah, you know, and I also think it gets back to the issue is like when we have a political system and an economic system that is just its primary function is to funnel more and more money up to the billionaire class by exploiting the poor and the working class and communities of color. When that is your entire system, and the people are starting to get poorer and poorer, and the rich just keep getting richer and richer, people are like out there and they're looking for like a way to explain what's happening. And what we're seeing actually is both capitalist parties, they each have a narrative to explain to the people about all the injustice in our society. Yep. But both of them are not actually getting to the root of the problem, which is our capitalist system, because that's their goal is to maintain and protect that. So what ends up happening is the Republicans, they sell a narrative of like scapegoating, right? Their big thing is like, well, let's blame the immigrants. You know, it's the immigrants, it's people of color. You know, that's the whole kind of, you know, instead of actually looking at the system and seeing how the system is flawed, the system is corrupt, the system continues to funnel more wealth up to the ruling class, they're like, no, you know, let's scapegoat immigrants. And then what the Democrats do is they say, no, let's not scapegoat immigrants. Let's scapegoat conservatives and let's scapegoat Republicans. It's amen, their fault. Amen. Even though we're actually propping up the corrupt, decrepit capitalist system and taking more money from Wall Street than Republicans took in 2020, we're going to use nicer phrases and we're going to say nice platitudes to act like we're virtuous. But we're not going to actually do anything about this systemic racism. And we're not going to do anything about all the economic inequality in our society. We're just going to continue to work for the billionaire class, but pose as your ally and talk a little bit nicer than conservatives do and just point the finger at conservatives and blame them. So each party is selling that narrative. And what's just becoming clearer than ever about our corrupt duopoly is that, yeah, like, well, one side, the conservatives are taught to fear and hate people of color and immigrants. Yes. The other side, liberals are taught to fear and hate the side that is taught to hate, right? And this keeps the people divided amongst each other while both parties and the ruling class continue to rig the system against us. Now, I don't think we should ever excuse the side that is taught to hate, but is hating them back actually a solution? You know, all I see is liberals on Twitter virtue signaling over and over again about how bad neo-fascists are. And while I agree, yes, neo-fascists are bad, it's like, do you want to do something about it? Do you want to actually do something about the neo-fascist uprising in America? Or do you want to just sit and virtue signal on Twitter and say you're better than a neo-fascist? Yes, you are. Yes. But like, let's do something. And so to me is the problem is like, if all your politics consist of is hating conservatives, haven't you just become the very thing that you started out trying to resist? Right? Yeah. Like, don't we need to move beyond, like, don't the people who actually want a better society have to build it and not just blame and scapegoat conservatives in the same way that conservatives scapegoat immigrants?
Yeah, and this is the point I always make, and this is why I always bring up blue MAGA, red MAGA. I mean, it's the same kind of thing. I spend a lot of time attacking Republicans, especially during days while I was more sympathetic to the Democratic Party. Even when I was anti-establishment, I spent a lot of time attacking the Republican Party, but when I'm looking at the Democratic Party and the general direction that they are going, my question, I'm like, are you actually opposed to Trumpism or are you just jealous of him? Because what you're saying, you say you're opposed to anti-fascists, and they always bring up the term fascism and they always try to use that like, oh, I guess you are sympathetic to fascism. They use that to mute criticism of the Democratic Party. But I'm like, whenever you do that, you're using fascism to whitewash the crimes of neoliberalism. Because, I mean, when you look at over 2 million dead in Iraq, when you look at the crimes done by the Black community, by the police force, the CIA, when you look at how our state has dismantled governments in South America, that's neoliberalism. So when you just blindly like, oh, you prefer fascism or neoliberalism, what you're doing is you're not actually being anti-fascist. You're apologizing on behalf of neoliberalism by doing that. Because what I'm saying is when I wanted to defeat Trump, what I criticized Trump on was him being an insane warmonger, him lying about his populist economic message. I'm like, I'm attacking him on his hardcore corruption, his ties with Saudi Arabia, which Biden seems to have a lot of the same ones. I mean, I'm attacking him on the root of the problem I see with the system. So when I went into defeat Trumpism, I went into defeat Trumpism in all its forms, in every single way it's a breathable and living thing. So when I see ICE, when you see the detention centers in ICE, that's Trumpism. When you see rampant income inequality, that's Trumpism. When you see corporatism and when you see pay-to-play politics, that's Trumpism. So it's crazy to me that whenever we criticize Joe Biden, they're like, Joe Biden literally giving people jobs they're not qualified because they had conflicts of interest. Well, Trump did the same thing too. Do you stand for anything? You understand that the reason why I didn't like Trump because I was trying to defeat that? What you guys did, you defeated him and replaced him with that. So what my criticism of you are, I'm not saying that the Republicans are better than you guys. I'm saying that you guys are kind of the same. And I'm telling you guys are, and that's the thing I always want to emphasize, because there are people that I'm like, okay, you got to chill out when you pretend that Trump is better. Like people, I always miss this on my show all the time. It drives me crazy when people pretend that Trump is anti-war. No, he was an insane warmonger. He tried to start a war with Iran. He tried to coup Venezuela. You don't have to pretend that the Republicans are something they're not to attack the Democratic Party. All you got to do is just bring up the fact that they're exactly the same. So instead of defeating Trumpism by abolishing ICE, by stopping this anti-socialist spree they're on, I mean, these are the kind of things you can actually crush Trumpism at its core, on an ideological core, but they're not doing that. They just got in, they beat Trump, and now they're governing just like Trump, protecting sex pets just like Trump. I mean, these are the same thing that Blue Red MAGA do. So I want to see an actual challenge to Trumpism. So I do want to say one thing. I don't know if I answered your question directly. I remember you asked me like my thoughts on like moving forward and left wing movements. I don't think I answered that in a proper way. Well, what I always stand on this issue was I think outside movements and left wing should always take all their shots when it's available. I mean, if you're blessed enough to have someone who represents you on policy like Medicare for All, ending the wars, and these kind of whatever your hot button issues in your area, I see no reason why you shouldn't vote for them. I mean, let's be real. But I don't see why anyone would vote for people who are completely antithetical to what they believe in. I mean, if you really want to be anti-imperialist, you can't vote to get imperialist power. You can't focus on that. But when it comes to if you want to elect progressive, I think you should elect progressive wherever they at. But what we want to emphasize in Frank Hampton Left is that we need to take the power for ourselves. And that's why I'm glad to say you brought this up on your show, emphasizing mutual aid and even direct ballot initiatives. I think those are one of the things that's people power. We can actually have change done. I mean, I'm in Missouri. Missouri had a Medicaid expansion and we decriminalized marijuana. I mean, we did a lot of things through ballot initiatives that you wouldn't think a red state would do, but once again, that goes to the thing that most people are more progressive than they give themselves credit for. So once again, direct action, mutual aid, these are the kind of thing we should focus on. But at the end, we should take our shot. So if you see someone local that we're supporting, you should do that. But the problem, unfortunately, is that you can't blame someone who want to completely divest from electoral politics. And this is why when we advocate for the squad and Bernie Sanders to do certain things and we get frustrated when they don't do it, it's not because we don't like them. It's because, honestly, it seems like I'm giving you guys good advice. Because I heard a lot of people say that they are less likely to donate to Nina Turner or donate to anyone who runs as a Democrat from here on out. Whether that's fair to them is not my point or not. My point is you can't expect poor and working class people to actually put money into a movement, put time. I quit my job and I canvassed for Bernie Sanders in multiple states. And now I'm thinking like, I don't know, was that really worth it? I mean, this is the kind of things you don't want to happen in the movement because you're not corporate. So you got to listen to your constituents. And I don't know why people believe that there's some politicians, because they're progressive, who may share policy beliefs that they're beyond listening to their constituency. Because if you do that, you're only hurting yourself in the long term. Because that means people are less likely to donate to you and more likely to vote for you. So overall, my point would be to take all your shots. But at the end of the day, you got to do what's best for your community. And if you don't want to spend your money on electoral politics, I think, honestly, at this point, I think it's way more useful to spend that money on mutual aid and that kind of stuff. But I think you should fight for whatever you think would be best in your community. But at this point, I'm all about breaking the duopoly, helping out people directly. I think that's an important step for the left.
I like that you say take your shots, because I think that's exactly like that's the issues I've had with progressives in the last 6 months is like they're not fighting back. Like the progressives do a great job of calling out the corruption in the Republican Party and then just look the other way at all the corruption in the Democratic Party,
yeah.
Right? That's funded by the that exact same corporations that fund the Republican Party. And so I think that's the issue is these progressives who are unwilling to challenge Nancy Pelosi, who are unwilling to challenge Joe Biden and to challenge the DNC and to challenge the corporate Democrats who control the Democratic Party and who just want to continue to govern for the ruling class and not fight for a $15 minimum wage and not fight for enforce the vote on Medicare for all. And it's like, you guys campaigned on all these bold progressive policies. Now that you're in office, you're sending tweets asking us to organize when you're not even actually doing the work exactly. And being like a movement leader. Like they could use their seats to help organize. Like AOC could use her, she has one of the biggest platforms in politics. She could use that to pressure Biden and pressure Pelosi to get behind Medicare for all. But she's not doing that. You know, she's using very tepid language and soft language when it comes to criticizing corrupt Democrats and then goes and criticizes corrupt Republicans boldly. But we're at a time now where corruption is corruption. And anyone that's holding back progress for the ruling class and for the poor and communities of color, they're standing in the way and they need to be called out. And that is what I see as the problem. And when we get back to this whole neo-fascism, neoliberalism, they're like two heads of the same beast. You know, they both believe in putting the wealth of giant corporations over the basic needs of the people. They both believe in allowing the private market to handle things like healthcare and incarceration and the climate crisis that the markets cannot handle because the markets are profiting off of these crises they're creating. You know, capitalism is the crisis. And so, you know, now that we're moving into a moment in history where like we need bold leadership and we're not seeing that, it's opening up the space for other people to lead and for people to lead in their own communities. And I think that is very important that, and I'm glad you're empowering people to do that as well, because anyone can lead in their own community, can start a mutual aid organization, can get involved with local grassroots organizations that aren't affiliated with either of these parties. You know, that's why I love Socialist Alternative and the Party for Socialism and Liberation, the Green Party, the Movement for a People's Party. There are other parties outside of this corrupt duopoly. And people can get involved and build power that way. Because I don't know. I mean, if progressives aren't going to actually fight for the change that they campaign on, I do. It's like, why fight for them if they're not going to fight for us? Like, what's the point anymore? You know? And so I need to see them step up. And nobody is above reproach. There's like these people who just want to worship them. And I'm like,
yeah, that's a big problem.
They did not get elected to Congress to be worshipped and praised as though they're celebrities. You know what I mean? Like, I just think we got to get away from all that. And so I'm just grateful for what you're doing with Fred Hampton Leftists. You know, we're kind of nearing the end here. I want to thank you for your time today. How can my listeners follow Fred Hampton Leftists and support your efforts to build this independent media group?
So we have been blown away by the support so far. We appreciate everyone who has a lot of excitement for what we're going to put out. I mean, we are looking at what I see as the new black leftist media space, because that's the idea that we have. The same way you have different leftist networks. That's kind of what we have. And we're planning on launch on April 1st. So
awesome.
Once April 1st comes, we're going to do our first live show with all of us as a panel. Once again, I carefully selected all these people because these are people I are strongly vouch for. I mean, a lot of people who watch my show, once again, my media name is Progressive Martial Artist. You can find me that under Substack, Twitch, YouTube. But Jackie, Rome, RJ, JB Fine. I mean, we got a lot of...
I love all of them. Yeah, I know all of them. They're all amazing.
So we're going to have our first live show on April 1st. And then from there, you're going to see a lot of content come from our perspective. We very...
What's the website?
We work on the website. The website is going to be live pretty soon. Okay, I think cool. We're just going to go very simple with the Fred Hampton Leftists. And we didn't have a website. We're going to obviously be on TikTok, Instagram. We got Twitter that we got a lot of support. So just keep an eye on us. Follow us at Fred Hampton Leftists. Keep an eye on our media. I mean, my good friend CJ, He got his own podcast as well. He killing the game. So the idea is that we all do our own thing, but we was like, man, we need to start coming together and we need to start blowing up each other's voices. So this is pretty much a great group. I'm very blessed to have the group I have, and the little circle I'm having, I'm more than happy with, because we all about uplifting each other, educating each other, and propping each other. We don't want to spend our time just attacking people. That's what a lot of people do now. They just want to get caught just attacking people. We want to focus on the issues, attacking neoliberalism, and actually empowering our community. And that would be in a Fred Hampton Left is about. But stay tuned. There'll be more information coming soon.
Nick, thank you so much for the time today.
It was a blast.
We'll be in touch soon, and I look forward to continuing to fight together to build a more equitable society that we all deserve. I mean, we all deserve a better world than this. This is not okay, what's happening with our government and in our country. And it's humbling to be in conversation and in the fight and in the struggle with you for that world that we deserve.
Yep. I love the stuff you put out, man. I'm finally glad we able to have this conversation. It was great.
Thanks for listening to today's episode of Amped Up with Ryan Knight. And before I go, I want to take this moment to thank our benefactors who make this show possible, who contribute at least $20 a month to the program. I want to thank Tyler Sambucci, Nat Tacito, Ed Romo, John Littman, Tiffany Mahmood, John Paul DeLuca, Susan Sarandon, DJ Comatose, Patty Cleary, Elizabeth Kim, and Lloyd Chapman. Thank you so much for your generous donations. And thank you, everyone, for supporting the podcast and supporting my work. I really appreciate it. Again, go to patreon.com/ampedup if you want to support the podcast as well. And for as little as $5 a month, you'll get access to our bonus content. Have a great weekend, everyone, and we'll catch you next week with an all-new episode of Amped Up with Ryan Knight.